Commend My Soul by Buzet. Read by
Argentum Lupin,
Rhea 314,
Duck Girly,
Rena Jenkins, and
Greedy Dancer.
Fandom Star Trek Reboot.
1. Engineer. "That's not gonna work," she says, voice lilting up and down with her own amusement, when the owner of the second-hand shop tries to pass off the hub for an early 21st century Toyota Spider as compatible with a mid-20th century Corvette. Poor Sap's going to ruin the beautiful car he has out in the lot, if her guess is right. And Winona's guess is always right when it comes to machinery. She has a touch. There was a once upon a time when she cultivated hobbies besides grunging up the undersides of her short, unpainted fingernails and coaxing ancient machines and electronics back to life. She calls it high school, with a side of, "Dear Starfleet Academy, I am a well-rounded individual. See how I build engines and run track and volunteer at the livestock refuge and am president of my school's classic film club? Admit me, please and thank you. Much love, Winona Michelle Griffith." Now she just builds engines and hosts an engineering track movie night for her fellow cadets, and will die a happy woman if she never has to smell another cow, ever, again. A glint of metallic green catches her eye in the box full of engine parts, wire, and junk. Winona laughs in triumph when she sees it. The spark plug practically sings out to her. A Mercedes Ford imprint. Only had an 11-month production run before the last internal combustion engines were phased out. And it's practically new in box. She can only pray that the owner doesn't know what a treasure he has. "What's not going to work?" The voice over her shoulder startles her, and she jumps, nearly dropping the plug. Nearly, because she does know what a treasure she has. Winona turns and, yeah, poor Sap is standing right there, hub held with a kind of loving reverence in his grease-stained hands. She thinks she could get to like him, so long as he's not adverse to learning A. better haggling skills, and B. better vehicular anatomy. He's certainly easy on the eyes. "That," she says, pointing to the offending part, "is not going to fit your car. It's going to cause more problems than you already have, and you're probably going to rue the day you walked in here, which is very sad because here is where I spend practically all of my spare time, Corvette."
"I do have a name," poor Sap says, then, "it's George, George Kirk."
"Winona," she says, "I'd offer my hand, but yours are full." George puts the hub down. Winona decides she likes him.
2. Doctor. "You'd think I joined a nunnery the way you talk about it. For God's sake, George, it's only med school." "Which I don't have a problem with in theory," he replies sullenly from where he sits in her desk chair. He leans backward on two legs, and if he falls and cracks his skull open, Winona will absolutely not be fixing it. She manages, "in theory?" without squeaking, and then, "It's 4 years plus internship. I'll do it in 3, and I'll have my MD by the time the Kelvin pulls back into port."
"Nursing's only a year-long program. You could transfer on with us then. Be there for the greater part of the mission, and then do an MD when we both get back."
"Get out of my room, George," Winona tells him, voice tight. If he stays any longer, or if she says anything else, it's going to be something she regrets, and they've already spent too many of their last hours together fighting over this. Even when they're not talking about it, the subject hangs there like a scorned albatross, tightening the air and beckoning the storm.
I'll miss you. I'll miss you so much. I wish you'd reconsider."
He's halfway out the door. "Yeah, and I wish you'd buck up and do a PhD with your promotion instead of jumping right back in the fray because you can."
"That's not..."
"If you say that's not the same, I swear to fucking God, George, you'll be tacking another 5 years of not getting laid onto your sentence. Go." Winona does not pour herself a drink when he leaves, but not for want of trying. She jumps when thunder cracks outside and drops the brandy bottle, glass and alcohol rolling out across her floor when it breaks.
3. Navigator. She gets out of the wheelchair into the turbo lift, gets the lift closed before the doctor can stop her, and if she's lucky, she will not be among those women who give birth while stuck in an elevator. The lights flicker around her and she bites nearly through her cheek. For fear or for the pain of her labour, she can't really tell, and she wishes she had accepted the painkillers when they were offered. Blood may drip down from the corner of her mouth when she steps onto the bridge. She's only 7 centimetres. Sam spent almost 5 hours at 7 centimetres. She has time. Oh, she better have time. And she makes it to her place at the helm without falling over, though the ship shudders around her and it's too close a thing for her comfort. What the hell are you doing here, Winona? Saving your ass, she replies, and when George orders her off the ship at the same time another contraction hits, she tells him to kindly go fuck himself. When she can speak again, she says, "We're getting out of here. We're getting out of here. Together." It's gonna be some story for the kids, huh? The ship rocks. Klaxons blaring, counting minutes between now and her next contraction. Winona can only hope so. It'll be a hell of a story, and as her fingers skim across the navigation console, she finds the breath to tell her husband, "Forget what I said about trying for a girl."
4. Hero. The only thing I did was have a baby in the wrong place at the wrong time, Lieutenant Pike. When everything is said and done, the Federation will remember me for that, more than they'll remember me for any achievements I actually made or work I contributed to science.
5. Mother. Her mother sighs, and in that self-motion manages to sum up every last word or implication she has ever made about Winona's life choices. Every single one of them. Good, and the bad, and the mediocre, and the what were you thinking? She probably has it right. The clock in the background of the vid transmission shows 0230 in Iowa. Though it's still daylight, ship's time. It's not forever, Mom. Just until George and my transfers to Starbase 47 go through. That's what you said with Sam, she says. He called me Mommy yesterday. Do you know that? The new baby is too small to feel yet, but her hands move to clasp over her belly anyway, thinking silent apologies for her elevated heart rate and the anxiety hormones she knows are coursing through her system. Doc's already admonished her about it, and sometimes upset just can't be helped. What about the part where you agreed not to guilt-trip me? I'm just asking for a favor, not even long-term. She can't even threaten to revoke grandparent privileges, not when she's asking for help with childcare, not when asking for help with anything nearly kills her. But she will not cry in front of her mother. That can wait until after the transmission is terminated, and she can curl up on the bed with the last of her real chocolate and not a glass of wine. Because the universe and her own body both hate her just that much right now. One child is a favor, Winnie. 2 are an imposition. I can't raise your kids for you. It's time you thought about coming home. And I can't believe you just said that. No, I'm not asking you to raise my kids for me. I'm not. We need a little bit of help while we wait for the maternity, paternity, and early childhood leave, and the transfers kick in. Her mother just looks at her. Arguing with her is like arguing with a brick. It's probably also where Winona picked up her own sense of stubborn. I'm gonna go now, Mom. You think about what I said, love. Probably won't think about anything else for the rest of the week now, Mom. And before her mother can get another word in edgewise. End transmission.
The end.